Yeah, I put the oil and gas cabinets over here.
We'll call a meeting to order at 8:20 a.m., April 5th. For the record, we have Representative Cott, Representative Osterman, Representative Ogun, and myself. Today we have before us a Senate Joint Resolution 12, and we also have a briefing from the Mental Health Trust Board on the mental health land status. We'll start with the mental health. Could you?
Thank you. My name is Steve Planchon. I'm the Executive Director of the Mental Health Trust Land Unit within DNR. I'm not a representative of the Trust Authority. That's a separate entity. Their board was just named by the governor several weeks back. They had their first meeting a couple weeks back. They're going to meet again on Friday and Saturday here in Juneau. They don't yet have a staff, so I won't be reporting on the Trust Authority activities. What I'll be doing is providing a report on the DNR activities as they relate to the management development of mental health lands. Also with me today is Dave Thomas, who is the Natural Resource Manager within the Mental Health Unit. We can be reached at 762-2360 in Anchorage, and I've also have business cards I can pass out if you need to ask us questions after this meeting or later on in the year. Today we'd like to talk about, as I said, the management and development of mental health lands by DNR on behalf of the Trust. What I'm not going to talk about, as I said, is the Trust Authority. I know something about the Trust Authority, but it is a new board. I heard some of their impressions about what they're doing, but I think it would be best if you hear directly from them about what their mission is and how they're going to tackle that mission. I'm also not going to talk about the lands that will be returned to general state status as a result of the settlement. Those lands will be managed by the Division of Land within the Natural Resources. They will not be managed by the Mental Health Trust Land Unit. I will touch just on the high points of what we're doing, keep it brief, and that way, if you have more specific questions, we can get to those in the time we have allowed. What I'd like to talk about, the topics are the framework that we're operating within, the guiding principles that we're using, the program responsibilities that we have, the operations, the example, some example activities of what we're doing so we can get a flavor for what we're about and how we see our role and how we're performing that role, and also revenues and costs. First thing I'd like to draw your attention to is Attachment A. These documents were attachments to our briefing packet for the Trust Authority at their first meeting, and that's where the attachments come from. That's why you don't have a document in front of them. Attachment A shows what we in the Trust Unit put together to graphically depict our relationship within the settlement, overall settlement. As you can see, the Trust Authority has three programmatic responsibilities: the mental health programs, the fully integrated mental health approach to mental health in this state. That's a big program responsibility that they'll be tackling in cooperation with a bunch of other entities that already exist. They also have the responsibility, as you're aware, of managing the $200 million trust fund through a contract with the permanent fund, and they have the responsibility of managing 1 million acres of land through a contract, or overseeing the management of 1 million acres of land through a contract with DNR. We are the Trust Unit. We have, by law, the responsibility. We are the unit that was set up specifically to manage trust lands. So, as they say, the buck stops with us in terms of the management of trust lands. I report to Commissioner Shively. I also, of course, work very closely with the Trust Authority. In terms of the guiding principles, if you turn your page, to give you a sense of where we're going and why we're going where we're going. The circles that you see here, what we did, we have a small staff. Right now it's just Dave, I, and a temporary administrative assistant. We'll have two more. We'll have a staff of four. We don't have extras, but we can make copies of this packet for anybody that needs a copy later. What we did here is we took the four guiding principles that were stated in law in terms of we're supposed to promulgate regulations that go along with the settlement to implement the settlement. And the guiding principles that were provided by the statute were long-term benefit of the trust, including sustained yield, management for the benefit of the trust, that's a loyalty to the trust, management for multiple use, and maintenance of the trust land, actively managing and maintaining the asset base so that it does not lose value over time. We added, for the purpose of our office, the Mental Health Trust Land Unit, we added some guiding principles. positive marketplace reputation. We want to turn the reputation of the Mental Health Trust lands from the worst place to do business to the best place to do business. We want to turn things around. We have 1 million acres of land to manage, and we want to do a good job of that so that when people want to do things on the land that will result in revenues going to the beneficiaries, it can get done and the money and the revenues can be generated. A dollar saved goes to the beneficiaries. That's an important one to us. We want to be cost-effective in all of our actions because when we do save money, that stays in the income account, that goes to the beneficiaries. It doesn't go to our management, and we don't want it to go to our management unless it's absolutely necessary, but we want it to stay with the beneficiaries. Keep trust activities separate from general state land activities. What that means is we do not want to be guilty of commingling activities so that we lose the pathway on the actions, the decisions, and most importantly, the money. We want to be fully accountable to the trust authority so that when they ask the question, how much money did we make this year, we don't have to go and pull files apart to find which actions were attributable to trust lands and which actions were attributable to general state land. We want to start that, or we have started that already as of about 2 months ago. All actions are separate. The department order was just signed about a week ago, which makes it official that we will be keeping those activities separate. Effective working relationship with DNR, that'll become apparent in a couple seconds as to why that's absolutely necessary. The different divisions in DNR, the staff that work within those divisions, we need to keep an effective working relationship with them. Listen, learn, and improve. That's important to us. For example, if you hear of anything on the street or here in this room or elsewhere in Juneau or back in your hometowns about what we're doing and how it's a problem to your community, we'd like to hear about that. And if we can fix it, we want to fix it because that goes to our guiding principle of maintaining a positive market reputation, a positive reputation overall, regardless of whether it's market-oriented. And finally, one that you don't have on your list, but one that was brought up at the Trust Authority meeting, do it correctly, not quickly. Be careful, be cautious. This is a trust that we're working with. We need to do it correctly, not quickly. Those are the guiding principles. In terms of the land and the resources, if you'll turn the page, I won't recite any of this. This is something you can look over at your leisure. We have about 1 million acres of entitlement that resulted from the settlement. This page depicts where those, what types of lands those are, where those lands are. Some of them are original mental health lands. Others are substitute lands that were provided by the state. As you can see, the lands are spread throughout the state of Alaska. The interior, we go as far north as the Yukon River at Circle and all the way down to Ketchikan, over to Kodiak, up to Ophir, to Katna. We're spread throughout the state. I want to say 4,700 parcels, something like that, I believe. A lot of parcels, separate land out there that is in need of management by the trust and the unit within DNR. The map that you have here is a generalization of those lands. As you can see, it is spread throughout the state. The colors show whether or not they were original trust land or substitute trust land. They also show lands that were returned to general state land status. And those are important things to know also because there have been some questions about, for instance, the Chena River Recreation Area, the Haines, the Chilkat Bald Eagle Preserve. Those are lands that will go back to, as you know, general grant status. They'll be managed by the Division of Land, Division of Parks, and others, and not by the Mental Health Trust Land Unit. Program responsibilities, if you'll turn the page, this gets to what I was talking about a second ago about the need to have an effective working relationship with the DNR. Looking at this graphic, you'll see that the Mental Health Trust Land Unit program responsibilities are the same as DNR, the same as Weyerhaeuser, the same as a Alaska Native Corporation. We cover a broad range of responsibilities, oil, gas, timber, minerals, recreation and development, subdivisions. We also have the typical administration responsibilities, risk management, finance. We also are in need of legal advice from time to time. As I said earlier, we only have four staff. Four staff won't cover these bases. What we intend to do is keep the core staff very small, four people as I said, and rely upon the expertise of DNR where we need that expertise. So where there's a gap between what we need to do and what we can do with existing resources, we'll fill the gap with RSA agreements or a contract with a division of or the Department of Natural Resource staff or fish and game staff if that's necessary, or more importantly, with private contractors if that's what we need to get the job done. And that also goes back to dollar saved goes to the beneficiaries. If a private contractor can do it for less cost at the same quality, we're going to have to take a serious look at that. and use a private contractor. There may be other offsetting reasons why to use DNR, Fish and Game, or other state agencies, and probably that's going to be the case. So as you can see, it's a lot of program responsibilities that we're covering here, but we intend to do that as efficiently as possible. Moving on to operations, and that's the end of the graphics. In order for us to operate, by law, we have to have a contract with the trust authority, an RSA agreement with the trust authority. That agreement will basically come out of a work plan, an approved budget that we will work with the trust authority to develop. Our goal at this time is to have the contract in place by July 1st, 1995, so that we'll start the new fiscal year with a contract fully in place where they have a very good understanding of what we're going to accomplish and how much it's going to cost to accomplish that. That contract will require ongoing consultation with the trust authority. We will be meeting with them regularly, either the full trust authority or their lands committee. They have a lands committee that's made up of Tom Hawkins, who works with Bristol Bay Native Corporation, and John Malone out in Bethel. We have, in terms of regulation or operations, a very important responsibility, and that's to develop regulations to implement the trust settlement. At this time, we're hoping to have those regulations out within probably about a year. We're going to take our time on that in a matter of speaking, doing it correctly, not quickly, because we want to make use of the same approach that was used to get the settlement over the goal line, and that's to use working groups out there of affected parties, interested individuals, companies, so on and so forth, agencies, so that when we put the regulations on the table for consideration, everybody, as much as possible, is nodding their head. Rather than telling us to go back to the 50-yard line. I apologize for sports metaphors if they're not appropriate in here. Other things are operating arenas that we're focusing on, two key operating arenas, protecting the assets, that's land management, making sure that if we're not developing it, someone else isn't either. That goes to trespass abatement, things of that nature. And development, generating revenues from these lands for the long-term benefit of the trust. And that's an important one. That's something that the trust authority at their first meeting made very clear to us, that they are interested in the long-term benefit of the trust, which means that if we're going to have a piece of land forever, we don't do something on it today to maximize revenues, which means we can't make money off of it 20 years from now. We don't want to do that. We want to make sure that the actions we take are in the long-term interest of the trust. Those are the operations. Example activities that we're involved in. One very important one is trying to find ways to streamline our process within DNR so that the management of trust lands isn't slower than what it typically is within DNR already. DNR, as you know, has a big job to do. They have not as many people as they probably need to get that job done, and so sometimes it takes quite a while to get permits processed, leases executed. If we want to change the marketplace opinion from mental health lands being a problem place to work to being a good place to work, we need to make sure that those things are processed quickly, that the leases are executed as fast as possible, so on and so forth. So we're paying a lot of attention to that. How do we make things go faster within this unit, working cooperatively with the other DNR divisions? Administration of existing leases, contract, rights-of-ways, that's a big job. We have a lot of rights-of-ways, existing contracts, existing leases. They require our attention. And we're focusing on those. What we're trying to do is where a lease or contract may not be in the best interest of the trust, if there's a way to work with the lessee, if there's a way to work with the party that we're in contract with to improve that so the trust, it's in a better interest of the trust, we're making that attempt to do that. We've had a couple cases already where it was both in the benefit of the lessee as well as the trust to work on the lease to make it better. We're looking at a couple of those existing leases and contracts are very important ones. For example, up in Fairbanks, we happen to own the ore deposit at Fort Knox, the trust does. We also own the mill site that's associated with the Fort Knox development. The Fort Knox development is extremely important to the trust, and it's also extremely important to the community of Fairbanks. I was impressed. I was up there the other day at a public meeting that DNR held for the mine development. There must have been 100 people there at the meeting. There was about an hour conversation, testimony provided. There was not one negative comment about the mine operation. I've never sat through a meeting like that where development didn't end up with somebody saying something negative about the operation. What that told me is that this is a very important project for the community of Fairbanks. And if we're that key to that project, we better make sure that we're administering that contract, that lease, well, that we don't cause bumps in the road, so to speak. Also, down at the Cape Yakutag area, we happen to own the infrastructure that's necessary for the University of Alaska to harvest about 17 million board feet of timber a year. That's important to the trust, the revenues that are generated by that, and it's also important to the university. So we want to pay attention to that existing lease and contract. New opportunities, what we're looking at in terms of operations, example activities, an exercise that I call loading the buckets, taking a look at our portfolio and saying, where are the near-term opportunities for mineral development, timber development, residential development, tourism development, things of that nature, and trying to come up with strategic plans where those can actually get off the ground and make money for the trust. It's important that we focus on activities that have a practical chance of getting up and running. We don't want to waste money by going down a road that isn't going to result in something happening on the landscape, taking on a fight instead of a winning project, in other words. Other things we're looking at, information management. We want to become the experts on this land. We want to know as much about it as possible. We want to know what other people know about it. Because if we do know as much as we can about the land, we're going to be able to make faster decisions and better decisions. That's an important activity. And finally, most importantly, I think, is the public relations aspect of what we're doing. We need to work very closely with the communities that we're involved in. We need to work closely with special interest groups that have an interest in what we're doing or have an interest in trying to keep us from doing things because of possibly misinformation. And we have a need to be out there generally working well with the general public. Also, if you take a look at the land patterns here, we happen to be neighbors to several Alaska Native corporations. We want to walk in and knock on doors and talk to folks and say, we're your neighbor. You may be doing something that we can joint venture with, or we're going to do something that might affect your land. You need to know about that. We did that yesterday. We were in Sitka. We stopped in at Sciatica's office, introduced ourselves, talked to folks over there. We also stopped in and talked to the city planner. We talked to the Forest Service. We talked to the local environmental group. We made the rounds, and we want to start a relationship by just informal conversations, having coffee, and talking about joint interests, joint land, so on and so forth. In terms of revenues, wrapping up here, if we look at our portfolio as it exists today, it generates about $300,000 in annual revenue. That's existing contracts and leases. We're hoping in the first year to increase that somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million. As I said earlier, we want to do things correctly, not quickly, and so we want to be careful about what projections we're making. In terms of cost, at this point in time for the FY96 budget, which you probably saw earlier, may have seen, we have a core staff that cost about $300,000. That's the four staff members and what it takes to keep them online. We're thinking of, or we have projected at this time, about $300,000 in RSAs with other divisions and private contractors. It's important here to know that what that is that's if necessary. In other words, if we really need something done and we need a contract, we'll do it, and we will go and use that fund, that $300,000 that we're saying is contractual. And we have about $100,000 that we have identified as, I guess you would call it, a contingency fund that we're not asking the trust authority for at this time, but we're saying, please keep it off onto the shoulder of the table there in case we come up with an opportunity that needs to be addressed in a timely way, where we need survey, engineering, things of that nature to make it happen so we don't miss the opportunity, don't miss the revenues. In closing, I guess you can say we're open for business. We intend to have lean and effective operations. We intend to keep our eye on the dollar, and we intend to work very closely with the authority to chart a course to success as best we can. And as I said earlier, we want to hear if you hear of any mistakes that we're making. Or if you hear that we're doing the job well, we'd like to hear that also. Thank you. Any questions?
Okay, is there any questions for
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Representative Logan.
How much would you say in total assets the Mental Health Trust has in its portfolio?
There's different opinions on that, but I want to say it's somewhere around $1 billion. That was, of course, one of the argument points in the settlement itself between the plaintiff attorneys and the state.
I just wanted to let you know that I was glad to hear that the attitude is to be the best place of business instead of the worst place to do business, because you know, my district has suffered a lot because of the mental health suit with losing our Wishbone Hill coal mine project, and since then the international market for steam or coal has gone soft, and that whole project's, unless something majorly happens in the world market, pretty much in mothballs now. So
that project is the reason we took up that motto. There was a gathering in Japan several years ago with the coal-owning entities, state and private, and they were gathered around a table making a presentation to some Japanese companies. And the gentleman from, or woman from Wyoming, whichever it was at the table talking about the great coal opportunities in Wyoming. And apparently one of the Japanese gentlemen said, are there mental health lands in Wyoming?
No.
And then, well, what are mental health lands? And he went on to explain what mental health lands were. He said, well, no, we don't have that in Wyoming. Mm-hmm. He said, good. So you're absolutely right. We did fix that reputation.
You know, just one follow-up comment, if I can, Mr. Chairman. I've talked to the developers. You know, their counterparts over here in Palmer, and it defies their logic and reasoning why this project didn't go, because they felt they jumped through all the hoops and you know, got all the permits and acted in good faith and did everything that was required of them, and then they weren't allowed to develop this project, and they sunk a lot of money into that project, and I just think we've sent a really bad signal to the international business community with that. And I realize it would somewhat be under control, but there are perceptions, as in politics, perceptions count for a lot, whether or not, you know, and I think Alaska definitely has a perception problem in the international market. So I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, hopefully we can. It takes a lot longer to undo a bad reputation than it does, you know, to create one. So
we've identified that problem. We've been in front of the Coal Miners Association already, with Charlie Vody and Bob Stiles and Placeramics and those folks, and that we're making an attempt to go out and visit with as many groups that have an interest in mental health land as possible to say things are different. We're trying to do things as quickly as possible. A good example of trying to do it right. We had a lessee that had a bank loan, $100,000, that wanted to make some improvements or had made some improvements to their property. They needed a security assignment. It was a state lease. It was a bit of a problem because the lease had not been maintained as well as it should have over time. They had been very frustrated, probably about a year of frustrations in working this thing out. We started working on it, and within about 3 weeks, we had it fixed. The Bank of Alaska was very happy. The lessee was very happy. Dave Thomas, who's sitting behind me, on a Friday night at 6:30 at night, delivered the paperwork to the bank so they could pouch it to where it needed to be pouched. They couldn't believe that he was there at 6:30 night delivering something for the pouch. But that's what we'll do. We'll do what it takes to change the reputation.
For the record, Representative Davies showed up here about 8:25. Representative Davies.
Thereabouts. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On your attachment D, you show a set of portfolios for program responsibilities. Can you give us some sense of how, you know, if I go back and I compare this to attachment A, which says the Mental Health Land Trust Unit will be 4 staff. This looks like a pretty daunting set of responsibilities for 4 staff.
Yes.
Can you tell me how that's going to be divvied up?
Yeah, you're exactly right. That's a point we made earlier, was that that's why we have this graphic, is to show that it is a daunting task. And in the budget, if you look at the FY96 budget for the Mental Health Trust Land Unit, which I don't have here, but it's in your packet somewhere, I suppose, our core operations are about $300,000, which is the 4 staff. We also have about $300,000 for in the contract category, and that'll be to do RSA agreements with other Department of Natural Resources employees, divisions, as well as Fish and Game or others that are necessary, and private contractors. A good example would be mineral development, Fort Knox, more importantly, let's say. We're working closely with the Division of Mining on that, where we have the responsibility to make sure it's done correctly. But because that particular activity may not be a daily activity in our staff, it doesn't make sense to have someone that's on full time to do it. And so we work closely with the divisions in DNR that have that expertise. if the expertise isn't there, we'll go find it someplace else. We are looking right now at a mental health trust land unit timber sale at Cape Yakutaga, possibly in FY97. It would be the summer of 96. And to do that, we'll work with the Division of Forestry for a layout of the timber sale and helping us technically. However, if the Division of Forestry can't provide everything we need, for instance, they can't do it in a timely way because fire season might take them offline, we'll look to the private sector to bring us what we need so we can generate the dollars in a timely fashion. Our loyalty, as our guiding principles show, needs to be the trust and make sure that we manage it efficiently and effectively. What we didn't want to do is grow fast. I used to manage lands for Cook Inlet Region Incorporated, and as I was saying earlier, this could be them, this could be Weyerhaeuser, this is DNR when you look at this model here, and it's just a matter of knowing what you need, and if you don't have it, finding a way to get it. Does that hit the question?
Yeah, pretty much. What sort of, I know that you mentioned it and we had some discussion about the importance of it, but could you maybe give us a few more examples of the kinds of things you're going to be doing under this heading of public relations?
Well, we have a, right now, for instance, we're a small staff and it's hard to cover all bases, but we're trying. And one of the first things we did was brainstormed on exactly that question. What can we do? Well, the first thing was we need to get out and get a multiplier. And the multiplier that we chose, for instance, to go out and talk to select groups of individuals that are in associations that have a broader constituency. And so we've spoken at gatherings of the Right-of-Way Association, who are very concerned about mental health trust lands, the Coal Miners Association, the Alaska Miners Association, in both Anchorage and Fairbanks at their monthly meetings, the Utility Association, the Title Insurance Association had their statewide meeting in Anchorage about a month ago. We spoke there. And so we're trying to get out and speak to as many users or groups of people that are interested in the land so we can say this is what we're going to do, and if you have questions, we're here to address those questions. We also said, you know, maybe we need a real public relations program because we do have a problem with perception. And the University of Alaska has a public relations curriculum. And we talked with one of their professors, one of their seniors, has taken the Mental Health Trust Land Unit, DNR's unit, on as a project and is helping us work on things such as a DNR newsletter in the DNR newsletter where we actually address mental health issues, broadcast facts to interested groups, identifying other people that we need to get out and see. We're working with the Mental Health Trust Authority has a PR person, and that's a pro bono, by the way. That's the university that's providing this at no cost. And we're looking for opportunities like that because in some ways we consider ourselves, one day we look at ourselves and we say we're just like a company. The other day we're the division of, or the Department of Natural Resources. And sometimes we like to think of ourselves as a nonprofit when we go in and say we'd love for you to do this for us. And if we save a dollar, it goes to the beneficiaries and we'd love it if you don't charge us for it. So we're doing things like that. The public relations person is going to be on, the university person is going to be on until the end of the school year. The Trust Authority has a PR person that's providing pro bono services and helping us also. So we're actively trying to get out there and do a good job on public relations. And on that note, if you heard anything I said today that you think won't go across well, let me know because that's something we're going to do. I'm going to make a presentation to the Right-of-Way Association a week and a half from now, and I'm going to have the PR person in the back of the room. And after the fact, I can say, okay, what I do right, what I do wrong, and try to improve.
Representative Davies.
Do you have any specific targets on how to get to the various municipal governments?
In terms of talking to them? Yes, we're actively addressing them. We've been in and have met with the mayor's office of the North Star Borough. We did that 2 weeks after I came on. We were just in Sitka yesterday, met with Wells Williams, who is the city planner for Sitka. The city administrator wasn't there. Have talked to folks in the Matanuska Valley. We haven't talked to everybody we need to, but as we said earlier, in order for us to manage in the long-term benefit of the trust, we need to do things in a way that the community feels good about us. And I think the first door we need to go through is the municipal organizations. Say, we're here, this is what we intend to do, is it going to cause a problem? And for instance, in Sitka, when we were there yesterday, we had some wonderful discussions about opportunities we could do together. And we'd like to follow up on that.
Any more questions here? You mentioned your plan of dealing with different sorts of, or being a different type of company at different times.
Yes.
And what is your, and I hear your main focus as far as making money. Do you think it'll be very difficult to change, shift gears? And would it be done in different, during projects or?
Shift gears from the way DNR normally does?
Yeah, like,
things?
Well, like you mentioned a normal company, you know, a private company. Is it going to be difficult? Like, let's say, for instance, maybe I'm not getting my question out correctly, but let's say, for instance, you mentioned earlier where DNR, or the Forest Department, wouldn't be able to finish the layout for a timber sale, and they would have to change, you would have to change and go out privately. How much lead time would you need for that?
Well, that's a real good question, and the way we're addressing that is I have never worked for state government in the past, and most of my experience has been in the private sector. So we take and Dave has spent a lot of time in the private sector also, who's also on the staff. We take when we look at a project, we take a private sector view at it, and when is it that we want it to happen, and working back from that time, what things need to happen in order for that to take place. We don't want to be caught in the situation like you're just describing, where we're halfway down the road and find out that we've put all of our investment in a person on a staff that can't get the job done by the time that we need it done. We need to ask those difficult questions early in the process, make the decision whether we need a private contractor or an agency RSA at the beginning, so we don't have to switch horses midway through the project. I'm sure we're going to have some mistakes, and we'll learn from those mistakes. I guess the answer to the question is it is going to be somewhat difficult at first because we have to operate under Title 38. That's required until we have new regulations. We have to be consistent with Title 38 unless it's inconsistent with the Mental Health Enabling Act. Our approach today, so that we don't get in situations where we aren't able to finish a project that we started, is to look at those projects where that isn't going to be a handicap. And that's usually going to be a place where there is no competition for what we're intending to do. If there's no competition, then we can take an extra 35, 40 days through the public, or 60 days through the public notice process. If there's competition, the competition is going to win if we have to go to public notice and best interest findings, and they don't. And so that's probably not smart business for us to do that yet. When we have a better sense of what the regulations are going to enable us to do and the time frames they'll require, then we need to look at those other projects. That's an example of making sure we do the best thing with the dollars.
Any other questions from the committee members? If not, thank you.
Thank you. Marshall. Appreciate the opportunity.
Was anyone else going to talk on mental health?
No.
Thank you. We'll next go to Senator Taylor's bill opposing the U.S. Forest Service Civic Plan.
Again, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joe Ambrose. I serve as Chief of Staff for Senator Taylor. The Senator asked me to apologize this morning. He was asked to speak to an Association of Retired People this morning and promised to bring me back a packet for membership packet. So I hit the magic number here a month or so ago. Before I begin, I'd like to make it clear that Senate Joint Resolution 12 is not in opposition to the reinvention of the Forest Service Plan. It asks for suspension of that plan and review. Early in December, the U.S. Forest Service announced its reinvention plan. A copy of that half-inch thick document is on file in the office for those who care to indulge in detail, and believe me, the devil is in the detail. Briefly, this plan would centralize decision-making in Washington, D.C. Such a policy flies in the face of President Clinton's executive order, which calls for enhancing intergovernmental partnerships. It also puts lie to Vice President Gore's report on reinventing government, with its stated goals of empowering state and local governments and decentralizing decision-making power. Under reinvention, regional forest supervisors and other frontline leaders who now have decision-making authority, would be replaced by four people leadership teams, answerable only to the Chief of the Forest Service and the Secretary of Agriculture. Gone is any pretense of involving local and state governments in U.S. Forest Service decisions. The plan goes so far as to consolidate the regional offices now located in Alaska and Montana into a central office in Oregon. SJR 12 calls for suspension of this plan and true partnership meetings with the states, communities, and tribal governments. The Senate Resources Committee added ANSCA corporations to that list. The goal would be to develop a new plan, one that would involve the affected entities up front. The reinvention scheme goes far beyond the relocation of regional offices. If left to stand, it will mean a new era of Forest Service policy dictated from on high without consulting the very people most impacted by those policies. Gentlemen, just so you understand where we're coming from, in your packets, there is a memorandum to the congressional delegation from John Sandor, the former regional forester and former commissioner for the state of Alaska, incidentally. This memo talking about what the plan really contains was developed by Mr. Sandor in conjunction with a group of resource professionals from around the country, including Mike Barton, who is also a regional forester here in Alaska. The professionals are very concerned about what direction this plan takes the Forest Service in the future and the lack of involvement with the entities that would be most impacted by future decisions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any questions from committee members? Representative Davies.
Thank you. Yeah, is it possible to get a copy of this Sandor memo that's readable? Do you have a better original somewhere?
I have, unfortunately, through the chair, unfortunately the original is on gray paper, and it does not duplicate well.
I passed that magic mark, too, and it's hard for me to read these days.
I think
anyway,
we might have one that's a little cleaner than the one you're passing.
I would be interested in reading that. I just had a couple comments. I support, I think, the basic notion here that we want to have a Forest Service that's responsive to the local interests. I'm a little concerned about this is kind of a minor thing, but on page 2, lines 8 through 10, I don't understand that sentence. How is moving the Forest Service office an example of flawed science?
Okay, through the chair, Representative Davies, if you will refer to again the memo, from the professionals that you can't read because of the copy, on page 2 of the memo.
This is the same.
Yes, sir. It's actually it would be the third page in, I think, on your copy because you have a cover page. A second paragraph, one striking example of the flawed scientific basis for and definition of ecosystems and ecological boundaries is illustrated in the proposed realignment of Forest Service Regional Office boundaries. The strategic plan states that regional boundaries will be realigned more closely follow natural ecological boundaries. Incredibly, the strategic plan announces a timetable for incorporating Alaska's diverse and unique forest ecosystems under the direction of the Forest Service leadership team headquartered in Portland. None of Alaska's forest ecosystems are the same as those represented in the Pacific Northwest. As a matter of fact, many of Alaska's boreal forests are more closely related to ecosystems in the northern lake states and adjacent Canadian provinces. Their stated goals and the way they're carrying them out don't make any sense.
I just for the record, I said that I think the premise of that is a little strange. But
I didn't hear you, Representative Davies.
I just for the record, I just think that the premise of that paragraph that was just read is a little bit. I mean, it appears to be the premise in the Forest Service that they're going to try to align their administrative boundaries with ecological boundaries, and that seems a little strange. Usually, administrative boundaries are aligned more closely with political boundaries for operational reasons. And so I would say that if that is indeed an example of the science involved, it's flawed science because it doesn't make sense to, from a scientific point of view. You can do good science on ecosystems in Southeast from New York State if you're doing science. You don't necessarily have to have your office there to do the good science. So I guess I understand what the intent of this paragraph is then. Also on page 3, lines 7 and 8, I don't understand that. What's that intended to mean?
Through the chair, Representative Davies, Senator Taylor's intent with this language was that the compensation level, cost of living, et cetera, be more reflective of the productivity of the Forest Service.
So does that mean he doesn't want him to be paid at all?
You said it, John.
I'm just learning what Senator Taylor's point of view is here. That's
I wouldn't go that far, no.
Well, I don't know. I apologize for the flipness, but what I really still don't understand the intent of this paragraph.
Through the chair, Representative Davies, the intent resolve that you refer to, it's Senator Taylor's belief that one of the primary functions of the U.S. Forest Service in its management of our national forests is timber production, and that their compensation should be reflective of their productivity level.
So can I rephrase that? So you're saying that if in our view that they're not producing timber, that they shouldn't be compensated?
I believe, through the chair, Representative Davies, I believe that it's Senator Taylor's position is the Forest Service isn't producing timber, they should probably be part of the National Park Service.
I guess I understand the the notion here, but I guess I can't support that kind of a statement. I think that we need to have these resolves be directed at issues that we can really attempt to influence. And I seriously doubt that we're going to be able to impact the federal compensation policies in a manner such as this. So I guess I would move that we strike that one resolve on lines 7 and 8 on page 3.
Object.
There's been objections. Any more discussion on this motion? How does the I heard what you stated about the what Senator Taylor was ideas were in getting this in there, but how does this pertain to what we're trying to do?
Mr. Chairman, there was a similar motion made when this resolution was debated in the Senate, the fact the resolve is still in there gives you the result of what that motion was. This Senator Taylor felt that it was in keeping with the general tone of the entire resolution as far as asking that this entire process be reassessed. So as far as the language is concerned, this language was subject of debate at Sitka. The Sitka City or Borough Assembly passed a resolution supporting this resolution. They were called into question by members of the community, revisited the issue, including a briefing by the Forest Service on ecosystem management, did not withdraw their support for the resolution. In conjunction, well, it's a separate issue. They're not getting into it at that point.
Okay. Representative Davies.
Well, Mr. Chair, I find it, I think that this
The reason why I moved to strike it is because I support the basic notion that's in this resolution. I think that we ought to ask that this process be suspended, and we ought to ask that it be re-examined, because I do think that moving the regional offices out of the state of Alaska is a step in the wrong direction. But I don't think that it furthers our position in asking for those things to happen, to be putting in things that are just that can be taken as being just simply insulting. And so I guess I would just say that unless we can remove that kind of language from here, I won't support it. If we can remove it, I will.
I have to agree with Senator Taylor on this. I come from an area where we are run by the Forest Service, and the Forest Service isn't out there producing the timber, making the timber available to us at a very logical rate, enough to keep the mills working. As you've seen, we've had two mills go down, and they keep saying that the production or the timber is there, and they give us timber in some areas that we asked for, and to keep the mills working throughout the spring so that we can keep it going. We're running the mill at half right now. We have a sawmill down in Ketchikan area, and one in Annette Island, I think, is even down from a two shift to one shift, and the pulp mill is running at half production, and they're making timber available to us, but this time of the year when the snow is down, there are lands available for timber harvest, and they are in the lowlands, and they're giving us timber in the highlands, where high altitude timber, and we're stuck with not being able to get the timber because of the weather, and the Forest Service saying today that we're giving you the timber, you're just not taking it. They're not trying to work with us, and so I think it's very important that we keep this in there. At least we'll send a message back there, Representative Davies, that you know, let's get to work. I don't think it's embarrassing. I think when you shut down an industry, that's embarrassing. When we have the product, so. Do you have any comments?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just want to add that the new Secretary of Agriculture, Mr. Glickman, was just confirmed in an exchange with Senator Murkowski. This was one of the issues that Senator Murkowski raised with the new Secretary, and he has made a commitment to reassess the Forest Service role and what they're actually doing. The Senate didn't feel the language was too strong, and in fact, the individual who proposed, the senator who proposed the same amendment, ended up voting for the resolution. So,
Representative Davies,
yeah, Mr. Chair, I think that what happens in the Senate is irrelevant to this committee, in the first place. But secondly, I would say that the issue here is productivity. The issue here is whether there's timber available for the mills in Southeast. That's what people seem to be focusing on. I don't believe that Murkowski discussed Forest Service employee compensation with the Secretary. And I would think, in fact, it would be more appropriate for this resolve to consider the secretary's compensation or the regional administrator's compensation rather than Forest Service employees in general, because Forest Service employees in general are carrying out the policies that are set by their supervisors. And there are probably, I believe there are, Forest Service employees that are just as frustrated as you are at the rate at which timber is being made available. But they are required to work
at the direction of their supervisors, and they're also and their supervisors are required by the law to operate under the laws of the United States. And if we want to change fundamentally the way that's done, we have to change those laws. And I don't think that it's fair to single out one class of federal employee and reduce their pay because we're frustrated with the law that they're working under. They may be carrying out the task exactly the way we've told them to. That is the way Congress has told them to. And for us to say, well, they shouldn't be paid because they're not doing the job the way we like it, I think is an insult to employees who are probably trying to do the best job they can. And that's why I wouldn't support this language.
Well, I'm sure we can debate this issue all day.
Sure.
I'd call for the question.
Representative Osterman?
No.
Representative Davies?
Yes.
Representative Cott?
No.
Representative Hogan?
No.
Co-Chairman Williams?
No. Do you have any other comments from the committee members?
Mr. Chairman, if there's no other comments, I'd like to move CS for Senate Joint Resolution number 12, resources, out of the Resource Committee with zero fiscal note attached and individual recommendations.
You've heard the motion. Is there any objection to that motion?
Yeah.
Call for the question.
Representative Davies?
No.
Representative Cott?
Yes.
Representative Hogan?
Yes.
I would like to interrupt here right now. I'm going to hold this bill until a later date. There's nothing more to come before this committee. This committee stands adjourned at 9:15 a.m.